great future. We're talking real money.
What would Wall Street be without new hot ideas? They wouldn't be nearly as much fun. They certainly wouldn't be nearly as much fun to make fun of. Hi, everybody. I'm Don McDonald. This is Talking Real Money, the podcast. And over there in the other window, just 3,000 miles away, I feel like it's Romper Room. And in the magic mirror is Tommy, 3,000 miles away.
Is that
away
the direction I'm headed? I'm headed down. It's like Benjamin Button thing. I'm going to keep getting younger. Exactly. I'm all favor of that. Sign me up.
I bet most people don't even remember Romper Room. Romper Room.
Yeah,
Let's see. What were the other ones? Captain Kangaroo.
Of course. Sure.
And not to be outdone, Bozo the Clown.
I had Romper Room. And there was a local version of Romper Room that I was actually on in the San Francisco area.
There were local Romper Rooms around the country. In fact, I was in the audience once. I think it was in Chicago, WGN. For a Bozo the Clown episode.
That started your entire career, the Bozo.
Yeah, look at me now.
Let's leave it there.
Donald McDonald.
Sir, is that your nose, or are you just happy to see me?
I can make fun of myself. Oh, this is the podcast, rated E for big noses.
Exactly.
Anyway, this is great. I love this list. This list of terrible investments comes to us courtesy of the lovely folks at Morningstar. They put together last month, Amy Arnott, a chartered financial analyst, put together a list of the 15 wealth-destroying funds. These are funds or ETFs, the ones that have destroyed the most wealth over the last decade. And this is a list of all the trendy stuff, Tom.
Yeah, it's stuff that people get into after it's been hot. It's stuff that people hear from their friends and neighbors. Oh, you got to be part of this. And it's things that work for a time, generally a short time, and get you all worked up. And then, poof, the money.
Now, I'm not going to do all of the 15 because it's a bunch. But in here is a Russia fund. There are a bunch of short funds. Now, short funds, and what that means is they sell stock that they don't own. They borrow
stock
and
sell
it. Yeah. In fact, there's one from Direction that is a 3X bear, which means they triple down. They don't double down. They triple down.
And by the way, where I come from, if you say triple X, that's a whole different meaning, but okay.
Yeah. Another one. You got another one in. Good job. The bear funds have been really bad. The short funds.
The bear funds over the long haul have been horrible because you're betting against the upward movement of the overall stock market, right?
Which means overall, you should lose more than you win.
You got to be prescient about when to get in and when to get out. You got to be a great timer. Or you're going to lose because the market, as I said, has this sort of general upward motion.
Yeah, they are truly gambling funds. And of the 15, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 are short funds, including the worst one of all, which is the ProShares Ultra Pro Short QQQ, which is the NASDAQ 100. It lost 8.5%. It lost $8.5 billion over the past 10 years, which was a loss of more than two thirds of its total value from 10 years ago. Two-thirds.
Yeah. Okay. But the headline on this loser list is a woman I think you need to really dislike or maybe even hate.
Hate is a strong word.
It is. And, you know, I only say this because our friend Chuck Jaffe uses the word about Susie Orman, which I think is very strong. Didn't he used to have a regular column, Why I Hate Susie Orman or something?
No,
like that?
No, it wasn't a regular column. He had a regular column in the Boston Globe.
Okay, but he had one that was called...
Regularly he did a segment called, on his podcast, radio show called, Why I Hate Susie Orman.
And he pronounced it
that way.
Orma. I know he did. Strange. One of the great wealth destroyers is the ARK Innovation Fund, operated by a certain Kathy Wood.
It comes in at number three.
But she's working on it. I mean, she might be at number one sometime soon. Estimated it destroyed $7.1 billion of shareholder wealth. So what they're examining here is when people buy the fund, right? Mm-hmm. Because if you bought it prior to 2020, wee-hee, you're great because it went up 153% in 2020.
But yeah, most people, 8 people bought it.
Yeah, then. And then people said, wait, I got to be part of that. And then you bought it and it's had a much more difficult time. So $7.1 billion of the family, the ARK family, number one, $14.3 billion in losses over the past 10 years. So,
and what's funny, Tom, is that not only did ARK Innovation make the top 15 list, but another ARK fund, the Genomic Revolution ETF, made that list, losing $4.2 billion. But bear in mind, ARK Innovation is a much bigger fund. So they lost $7.1 billion and are currently worth $9, whereas ARK Genomic Revolution lost $4.2 billion and is currently about $2 billion in size.
ARK Innovation, that the good news is it's up 32% over the past 12 months. The bad news is it lost another $1.3 billion in assets because people have given up, right? It went way up. It went way down. But here's why I hate Kathy Wood, okay? I know you don't like me to say hate, I'm going to anyway.
It's a podcast. You can do whatever you
want. All right. Well, I appreciate that. Because the fund is operated, and these are direct quotes, reliance on instincts. She's picking companies based on instinctually, I think this is going to happen. This is
also known as gut feelings or seat of the pants investing.
And people I think you should know and respect in the industry have called this both a perilous approach and haphazard. I went back and looked at a few quotes about all this. As I mentioned, the one huge year run-up, 2020, and then since then, way underwhelming. In fact, way underperforming the S&P 500. I think that's in here. The S&P has, let's see, her goal, by the way, is 15% annual return, which I think is outrageous for her to say that, that our goal is to make 15%, because who could do that? But right. It's underproduced the S&P 500 for these last 3 years. And then the real reason that I just like her is she, a couple of years ago, said passive investing has gone too far. Passive investing has gone too far. I don't even know what that means, and I'm in the business. Passive investing has gone too far?
It means the same kind of thing it does when people tell me that Bitcoin has to go up. It means I believe that because passive investing wouldn't make me worth over $100 million personally.
I see. Okay. So it's because it's taken away my income.
Yeah. All right. Yeah.
I mean, her take was it's ruined the market because people just buy all these stocks instead of picking right ones. And by the way, there's still many, many, many people that own individual stocks. There are still about half of the mutual fund ETF industry that is actively managed, right? With either stock pickers, timers, sectors, all that kind of stuff like she's done. So it's a very silly quote, but it really got this is frankly, to be honest with you, the whole ARK situation, that's a boat that should sink. I mean, it's the biggest disaster, and since we're in a political year, I can say this, since the Michael Dukakis campaign, maybe the Seattle Mariners, and if you really want to say it, measure it up right, the Titanic. I mean, this is a disaster of epic proportions. Stay away from this nonsense and don't listen to it.
For Russell Wilson.
No, I wasn't going to poke you in the eye with that one.
Yeah, it's okay.
We're all chipping our pennies in to try to help you guys out on that
one. Yeah, you are not.
So, what do you learn from all this? I mean, what's the takeaway when you see these wealth destroyers, when you see someone like Kathy Wood who said, I rely on my instincts, what's your takeaway?
The next time somebody, be it an individual or a publication or a broadcaster, wants to tell you what's hot, plug those ears. That's the takeaway, because it is actually more likely to eventually be cold in the future.
Thank you.
Than hot.
Yes. The odds are that you don't know the odds are one. The odds are
that. I was hoping you would sneak that one in. I was going, he said the odds are. I'm hoping he'd say the odds are you don't know what the odds are.
And the odds are absolutely correct, Don. When you've gone up that precipitously, the odds are that you're going to go down quickly on the other side because you made a huge bet on something and huge bets don't pay off. What could you equate all this to in today's world? It's so easy. And I know we picked on.
I could equate that with ARK innovation. No, that's Bitcoin, in today's world.
Bitcoin ETFs.
Oh, Bitcoin. I have no idea, because this is going to air in the future. So I have no idea what ridiculous price Bitcoin has taken on. But I can say that prior to us recording this, Bitcoin had once again hit the stupidest of stupid levels. Now, my guess is, just a guess, and it's not worth anything because we don't believe any of us can predict the future.
My gut feeling is
at $69,000 of Bitcoin. Now, again, this will air in the future, so we'll see if I'm right. All these folks who were buying in at 10, 15, 20 over the last couple of years are going to go,
wait a minute.
Profit taking opportunity.
Big time. Cash out. Yeah. Uh-huh. Okay. Anyway, it totally reminds me of that because it's everybody piling in. It's new. It's hot. I can get in this ETF that owns Bitcoin. Sign me up.
Yeah. And the fact of the matter is, I want to give you, again, a scientific fact. There have been multiple studies done, not just one. Multiple studies. Swiss Finance Institute a couple of decades ago, Eugene Fama, Kenneth French, more recently, but still now about a decade ago or so, that looked into because there are mutual fund managers, active fund managers, people who pick stocks in a variety of different ways, technical analysis, fundamental analysis, seat of the pants analysis, whatever it might be. There are a variety of those, and a sizable chunk of them, depending on the part of the market, somewhere between 15 and 30% of them over the course of many decades, according to Standard & Poor's, somewhere in that range, they actually do beat their benchmarks.
Yeah, they do.
So the reality is, can you find one of the 15, 20, 30, maybe 35% of managers who, over a period of time, have beaten their benchmark? Can you find one of those? And the studies actually took into account something interesting, because we forget this. Remember, what are the odds in Vegas? 30, 40, 45% on some games of the players win?
Correct? I think it's something like, I only know with the slot machines, it's 0-100.
Well, yeah, it was 0-100 for you. Yeah. But generally speaking, there are a lot of people, they wouldn't go back to Vegas unless they were winning. So let's say 30%, a third of all the players win. Now, if a third of all of the gamblers in Vegas win, would you attribute their wins to luck generally or skill?
I'll go with luck on that one.
Yeah, I mean, you may have professional poker players who can win because they're very skilled at what they do, but there's an element of luck. So when these studies were done, these studies took into account the expected effect of luck. And you can chart that out on a bell curve, which makes it very easy to calculate. When they tossed that modifier in, they found that those 20, 30 plus percent numbers of winners dropped when factoring in luck to somewhere between a half of 1% and a little over 1%.
Yeah. And then you look at the number of funds and exchange traded funds out there. You got to pick the one half of 1% out of all those
that showed some possible skill.
Yeah.
And you got to do it after the fact. You don't get to know which ones they are before. You only get to know after. And what if they lose their skill? Or their manager.
Or they get old and they can't do it. There's 100 things that could happen.
So that's why this whole idea of trying to pick the best stuff is a total exercise in futility on your part. You can't win. Even if there was a possibility that someone could identify them, the people who are going to identify them are the billionaires, the hedge fund managers, the people who live and breathe Wall Street, not you.
And if nothing else, please, if nothing else, this should teach you, do not rely on your instincts. We have seen so many people make bad decisions about them with their money on their in that this has to happen. This is going to go.
You're
this is
smarter than everybody else.
You
yeah,
cannot
yeah.
do that. All right. I don't know. You haven't pegged out your trip yet for this summer, but I know a place you should go.
Not.
Myrtle Beach, South Carolina.
I've been I go to Myrtle Beach about we used to go to Myrtle Beach every other year.
Okay. Well,
because my wife's family had a condo and a house there. Yeah.
There's a woman named Kim there who wrote you and said, I came across your radio program in the mid 90s. Knew nothing about investing. You educated and convinced me I could do it. Now retired, still doing it successfully today. I owe my beginnings to you. Thank you from the bottom of my heart.
That's not a question. That's a very sweet comment.
I know. Well, I thought I'd just throw that out there.
Thank you. And I've been having a bad day, so that was very helpful.
Don and I are still recovering from retirement. That's what happens when you get
older. I'm telling you, I think that stuff like that, when you get older, it just kills you.
It's harder. All right, here's an actual question, right? Mm-hmm. Comes from Leavenworth, Kansas. Where
I lived there, too. I did.
Let's not go why you were there.
No, okay, I lived in Leavenworth in fifth grade.
Oh, okay. Well, that's a little early for incarceration, but I guess not too
but
early.
But it is the land of prisons. There's a state penitentiary nearby. There's the Fed.
Yeah.
There's the Fed military.
Proud to say I've never been there. But I did spend 4 years in Walla Walla.
Let me tell you, as a child, I remember it as being a very desolate place.
That may be the idea. I don't know.
Yeah.
If you escape, where are you going to escape to?
Yeah.
This comes from Ronald. Ronald says, gentlemen, I'm a 39-year-old active duty service member with almost 17 years in service. Thank you for that, Ronald. I have a high risk tolerance for investing, and as such, I am 100% in stock-oriented mutual funds. Good. I have $135,000 in my thrift savings plan allocated across the C, 75%. The C is the S&P 500. Mm-hmm. The S, that's smaller companies, 15%, and I, which is the international, 10%, and another $60,000 in a Roth IRA. I'm in the process of rolling over from some expensive American funds. By the way, I just looked up some of the American funds expense ratios. I think their international one's 99 basis points, 0.99, rather expensive. So he's moving the Roth to Schwab. The question is, how and when should I begin adding bonds to the mix, given I have a high risk tolerance and 20 or more years before I plan to touch this money? This from Ronald in Leavenworth.
Well, then probably not anytime soon.
No,
given the high tolerance.
But the asset allocation needs to be fixed.
I took a note to that effect. I have it right here in front of me.
All right, yeah. Because
my simple fix for the equity asset allocation in the TSP.
This is easy.
A third, a third, a third.
Ah, look at that. Ding, 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 ding. We're on the same page. Finally, it took 30 some years.
Third, a third, a third. Third C, third S, third I.
And no bonds yet.
What you're doing, and I can understand it, you're in the U.S. military, and we are Americans, and we do love our country most of the time. We tend to have a home team bias. It's kind of like me rooting for the Raiders and just not wanting to.
Ain't
do gonna
that. Happen in this lifetime.
But when it comes to investing, it's not sports. It's your life. It's your future. And international markets have tended historically to account for somewhere between 40% and 50% of the total capitalization of the world's economy. So, and international investments have bailed you out. And also remember, this is really important. When you invest, you want to lean more toward those assets that haven't done as well than toward those that have. Well, over the past decade.
You mean buy the things that are out of favor?
Over the past decade, U.S. stocks have dramatically outperformed international stocks, which is not a reason to ignore international. As a matter of fact, you're supposed to do the exact opposite.
Very hard to do, counterintuitive, and I just don't want to.
I don't want to. Well, I don't want to buy those until they go up. Well, that's the point.
Yeah.
If you wait until they go up, then actually they've already gone up.
And by the way, I have an idea for your Roth. I would just put it in one fund, either the AVGE, the Avantis Global Equity Fund, or Dimensionals Global Equity, which is DFAW. Either one of those would be great. All right. This from Nancy in Spanaway, Washington. No prisons there.
Spanaway.
I have seen at least one infomercial about investing in AI. That guy swears it's the next big thing to invest in and you'll see huge returns. I want to know what Tom and Don think about AI investing and if you have any specific directions on how to do so.
Oh, this is so funny. One, it's really, really hard to invest in AI. Okay? There aren't a lot of companies that are pure AI plays.
Ah, thank you. Because NVIDIA gets sort of posted as that, but it's not true.
It's not. It's only because their very rapid graphics processors lend themselves to the kind of work AI does. AI is a lot like a video game, which is what those processors were made for. And I want to use an example from today's program. Several years ago, there were people touting the incredible, and it is, the long-term potential is absolutely amazing for genomics, for genomic research, for rewriting our genetic code to cure diseases. It is working, but it's in its infancy, and there aren't
Could
a lot of
companies. Could they hurry up a little bit, by the way?
There aren't a lot of companies that are pure genomic plays, but ARC, the aforementioned ARC funds. Yeah. These guys created a genomic revolution ETF. I mentioned it earlier.
You did.
That lost 2/3 of its value over the last 10 years.
Two-thirds.
You do not want to play with innovations of any kind, because if you and that guy on that infomercial know about them, then everybody already does.
Especially the people that are trading stocks on Wall Street. Guess what? They spend a lot of money to find that out. So thank you. Stay away from AI.
Stay away from everything that is touted as hot. Yeah. That was the message at the beginning of the program.
Oh, that's right. We did just mention that a few minutes ago. So, all right. Great questions. Thank you, Nancy, for listening and writing us. Appreciate it.
And if you want to send us a question, all you need to do is go to our website, which is talkingrealmoney.com. Talkingrealmoney.com. Click on the contact form and you can either type in a message like these, or you can speak in a message. You can actually record it using the much higher quality mics that are now on our phones and our computers and the like. And those get answered on the Friday podcast, which, by the way, this Friday, this coming up.
Yes.
No, never mind. I'm not going to, because I don't know when this show will run. Okay. I forget that. I don't even know when this podcast is going to run.
Sometime.
In the next week or so. So it could be different. Anyway, I'm not going to tease it. You'll have to listen for yourself. Thank you all. Appreciate you being there. We really do. I'm Don. Over there is Tom. And pretty much every day, we're here trying to help you out by talking real money.
The opinions and views expressed on this podcast were current on the date recorded. Opinions, estimates, forecasts, and statements of financial market trends that are based on current market conditions constitute our judgment and are subject to change without notice, including any forward-looking estimates or statements which are based on certain expectations and assumptions. Although information and opinions given have been obtained from or based on sources believed to be reliable, no warranty or representation is made as to their correctness, completeness, or accuracy. Information presented on the podcast is not personalized investment advice from Appella Wealth. The views and strategies described may not be suitable for everyone. This podcast does not identify all the risks, direct or indirect, or other considerations which might be material to you when entering any financial transaction. Past performance does not guarantee future results, and profitable results cannot be guaranteed. We hope you realize that the information provided on Talking Real Money is for informational, educational, and hopefully enjoyable purposes only. The podcast is not trying to get you to buy or sell any financial products or securities. Instead, the program is provided as a public service by Appella Wealth, a fee-only registered investment advisor. Please see Appella Wealth's ADV Part 2A on our website for information regarding Appella's fees and services. Appella Capital, LLC, DBA Appella Wealth, is an investment advisory firm registered with the Securities and Exchange Commission. The firm only transacts business in the states where it is properly registered or excluded or exempt from registration requirements. Registration with the SEC or any state securities authority does not imply a certain level of skill or training. Appella does not provide tax or legal advice, and nothing either stated or implied here should be inferred as providing such advice. Thanks for listening, and please visit TalkingRealMoney.com for more information and important disclosure related to performance of any specific index or fund quoted in this podcast. And the lawyers get richer.